the great cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, England knock over the West Indies as Joe Root scores his second 100 of the World Cup, while England start popping hamstrings like they're going out of fashion. The rain threatens to end the World Cup and some people's belief in global warming. The ICC put a ban on Michael Holding from telling the truth, and no one can watch the English games on TV. Fatusha Natharaja joins the show, possibly from a train in the UK, to talk Jofra Archer, England and memes, all before hashtag AskTGC. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry in Melbourne. Pez, good morning to you. You know, most people, there, you know, it's Saturday morning here in Australia. People are asleep, not us, not the great cricketer. We're gonna talk about England and the West Indies for the people's enjoyment all across this great land and the world.
All we do is deliver, he goes. All we do is deliver our Australian constituents, especially on Saturday morning, as this is going to be an England loving show again. Lots of commentary. Yes. From our fans imploring us to stop speaking in such glowing terms about England. Does that say more about Australians than it does English people? Yes, without a doubt. But yeah, good morning, Higos. Here we are on Saturday morning to discuss a lot of England stuff in the absence of an Australian victory. They were very good overnight. I would like to borrow a prominent social media commentator, a great follow, Dave Tickner, who just said simply, Root is Roy, Wokes is Root. Yes, that's right. If you don't know what happened last night, England suffered many, many injuries, and by that I mean two, resulting in the promotion of Chris Wokes to number three, which would be the equivalent, I think, of Nathan Coulter-Nile being number three for Australia. He hit 40. He came in at number three and anchored like Joe Root and hit 40 against the West Indies, who nearly bowled us out for 130. So. What are you going to do?
Yes, that's right, Pez. I was having a think about this morning, actually, as I got out of bed at 5 o'clock this morning, and I thought to myself, Pez, I thought England have got to the point where they're just starting to give guys a go in the World Cup, and you know, Wokes hasn't had much of a hit. Ben Stokes hasn't had much of a hit so far in this World Cup. You know, I mean, got 80 in the first game, I suppose. But they're like, well, we're absolutely cruising this match, 200 against this West Indies team who just are obsessed with bowling short. Let's give a couple of guys a go because we might need them later in the tournament. And that reminded me a lot of the great Australian teams in the World Cup winning eras that we had. So I, you know, fair play to them. Just start giving blokes a go in a legitimately competitive World Cup game. Fair play to them. I also note that in the West Indies camp. Just their tactics. I mean, in the first couple of games they've played Pakistan and Australia, the bowling has been absolutely on point. It's been fiery. It's been amazing. It's been really, really good to watch. When it doesn't work out, it's literally just blokes bowling halfway down the wicket with no threat. So, but it's hard. But saying that, I mean, I thought England batted so well. Bairstow, Root, Wokes come in, and then Ben Stokes has just whacked a couple of fours to finish the game. So people wonder why we talk up England. It's because they're really good and they're going to win.
I really am looking forward to the England versus India final. Here goes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's incorrect, you know, because what I am looking forward to is getting an absolute tirade of abuse from Australians when, for whatever godforsaken reason, there's some kind of humidity around on semi-final day and Stark takes five for, and Australia's tactic of hoping for humidity and a wet wicket on the semi-final pays off.
Yeah.
I actually say that as a coping mechanism in case that actually happens. But
of course,
yeah,
yes.
England fan, England impregnable. You say, he goes, and rightly so, that it's all good to bowl short as a great tactic, but when you're defending 200, it just looks like you're bowling halfway down the wicket. Well, it's like, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, isn't it? Do England make that bowling look a little bit easier? Possibly. They did have England hopping around with some short stuff. You know, Root definitely looked a little unsteady. I noted Dre Russ, who, again, was bowling on one leg and with one arm before going off injured, used his ultimate delivery or his last delivery to lid the hell out of Johnny Bairstow and then walk off. So essentially, if you haven't seen the highlights, Andre Russell delivered the ball. It followed Johnny Bairstow, who was just giving himself a mountain of room on the offside with most deliveries he was facing. It just followed him and cannoned into his grill, big styles, and like made one of those really kind of car crashy sound thuds.
Yeah.
When it hit, and then Russell fell on the deck, and so did Bairstow at the same time. Just two blokes falling on the deck for different reasons. Bairstow checked his lid, walked to Joe Root. Andre Russell walked off. I thought, it's not the worst way. It's not the worst way to go off the field, really. Just to lid someone, go, yeah, that'll do. My body's gone now. It's just.
It's the way to go out, especially when, even by that point, it was like, yeah, West Indies aren't winning this game. So just lid a bloke and then get off, really.
Because to show how good a player you must be if you because Russell's body has been cooked for many matches and probably many months.
It's in pieces, Pez.
That he's actually still able to lid Johnny Bairstow with his final delivery before going, I cannot go on.
I find the West Indies tactics generally, I mean, there's been a bit of chat about, you know, England, what do they do if plan A doesn't work, because they all sort of just go, you know, try and hit it at 120, 150 from ball one. If that doesn't work out, then, you know, what do they do? The West Indies just have, just in all aspects, just the most one-dimensional plan. Like, we're just going to bounce blokes. But then with the batting, I heard Shane Warne talk about Andre Russell when he was batting and say, you've got to get a spinner on early, because it doesn't matter who's bowling, he'll try and hit you for six. And if he just comes to the wicket, he hasn't got the pace of the wicket and everything, he will, there's a great chance of getting him out early. And, like, just like everyone's identified this, Rashid comes on straight away. And drop catch. Actually, England's fielding was actually quite poor again in this game. Anyway, but just the tactics of, no, spinner's on, I will whack him for six. Chris Gayle just, like, refuses to run singles because, like, no, I will just do this in boundaries. I mean, I've got my own issues with Chris Gayle as a whole, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But so we'll just move on to Chris Wokes, who now opens the bowling for England and bats three. So he's an amalgamation of Ponting and Bradman and Shane Warne.
Well, he's Labour Shane, almost.
He's like
front line leggy bats three for Australia.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know how much you saw of Wokes bowling, but Wood and Archer got three wickets each, but Wokes' bowling at the top of the innings was really, really steady, really impressive. He's a funny guy, Wokes, because I think a lot of Australians would have just seen him play in Australia, where the Kookaburra ball does fuck all and he can't swing it, so he's just kind of like this military medium. But in England, he's legitimately dangerous, And on the test matches as well, he'd be right in contention for the Ashes, no question. Obviously, he bats so well as well. So a shout-out to Chris Wokes.
Just shout-out to our friend Chris, if you are listening, and I'm sure you are.
Exactly.
He's a good cricketer.
You know, half our audience is in the UK. No one's really saying, hey boys, thanks for beating up England. It's just Australians saying, like, fucking, they haven't won anything yet. And they haven't, to be fair, so fair play. That's good feedback to get. Pez, a lot of rain around in this World Cup so far. Is the World Cup over? Should we be playing it in different countries? England and Wales, you know, cricket should never be played there at any time, especially the summer. It's been good, hasn't it?
It's been really good, mate. It sucks when matches are rained off, but how did you get into cricket in the first place if you haven't reckoned with the idea of rain?
Yes.
You know, I just, like, I've worked in the sports business industry myself. My main insight is that it's just full of, you know, blokes aged 26 to 34 who all wear the same clothes.
That's right.
And the same white shoes that are just fractionally too young for their age and, you know, and do conferences with beers on the table. And they're all white and they talk the same way. But sports, you know, sports business chat would dictate that we need to find a solution for rain. You know, entertainment content these days shouldn't have time for rain. But, you know, it's cricket, it's England, it's quaint. It's like numbers on the back of jerseys, you know, don't start that conversation. Otherwise, you know, you won't get a podcast on a particular platform ever again. But cricket has a bit of quaintness to it. Deal with it. It's cool, you know.
Yeah.
If they have to share the World Cup at the end, well, that's funny too. Mm. There'll be heaps of articles about it.
Do you think the ICC and the power of the BCCI are actually they're actually triggering global warming? Like that's how they're going to solve the rain. They're just going to make it so hot that it never rains anywhere. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying, Sam Perry?
Yeah, and you've read between the lines of what I was saying before. So obviously, I do like the idea of the ICC, rightly so. You know, the ICC are generating cat memes at the moment on social media. We haven't talked about that, but I don't know if you saw this, Egos, but they put a post out the other day of like catifying players.
I haven't seen that.
And Pat was in inverted commas because you pat a cat. And I cannot think of one other example because I X'd out of it immediately, but it was disgraceful.
Fuck me.
On top of players. But I like the idea of like just putting the ICC up there with FIFA, you know, just as a completely disreputable organisation with heaps of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, are there any jobs going at the ICC?
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to look at it.
Well, social media manager for one.
Get me that ICC cheddar, you know, please. But yeah. Yeah, are they responsible for global warming? I guess in short, yes, mate. Yes.
Mate, just speaking on the ICC, you would have come across the myriad articles during the week about Michael
Great
Holding.
Great use of myriad, he goes. Well done. Thank you, not mate. Inserting the elf there.
Cheers. Michael Holding said he was criticising the umpires, and the ICC who said, well, you know, you are working for us as a commentator, so please don't tell the truth. Please don't actually commentate the game. Just be a mouthpiece for what we want you to say. They didn't say that explicitly, but they basically said, like, well, we don't feel comfortable with you working as the ICC because they are the broadcaster and they're streaming it across the world to all the different platforms. So, you know, don't actually criticise the thing that you're commentating on working for us. It's a weird situation. Of which Michael Holding said, you know, I've been commentating for 30 years, and if you want me to just become a mouthpiece, well, then that ain't going to work out too well for anyone.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not here to sell.
It's a weird
I'm here
situation. Yes, it's a weird situation, isn't it, mate? I mean, it happened last night. There was a tell you what, Dharma Seema had an absolutely stinking game. He had an absolutely stinking game, Pez. Terrible. There was an LBW which was hitting all six stumps, and he gave that not out.
It's a little sliding down, to be fair.
Oh, Shea Hope. There was another couple of ones which he gave, not out, drew over turns. Then when both teams had burnt both their reviews and their heads had been burnt out by Dharma Seema, the final wicket caught off the shoulder, Michael Holding commentating, and he basically had to say, well, this is what you get when your teammates, you know, burn the reviews. So he sort of he was towing the party line, so to speak, a little bit. But it's a weird situation, and which one we've come across ourselves recently, Pez, about if you're working for organisations who, you know, broadcast the cricket, then it is a tricky one where you can't. No one wants you to criticise.
And for the listeners bristling, who may have been watching at 12:30 a.m. or 1 a.m. as I was. Mm. The funny thing about Holding biting his tongue was with that situation, he was like, well, he can't review it, although it's clearly hit his shoulder because his teammates have burned him there.
Yes.
And over later they showed the Snicko and Brathwaite snicked it. So he was out. and I was waiting, you know, because I saw Twitter lit up. Going, easy Mikey, hold your tongue. and then the Snicko came on to show that the bloke clearly edged it. And I was hoping that there'd be a mea culpa or some acknowledgement from Holding, who was so upset at some poor umpiring or perceived poor umpiring. Nothing.
Mm.
So that was disappointing. Straight after the edge, he just stayed quiet. And I think it was maybe Hussain took it. Yeah, come on, Mickey. You've inserted yourself into the story. Maybe not inserted, but you're in the story. Play the role. I'm absolutely on the side of Michael Holding. I mean, I just don't understand the idea that the umpires are somehow agents of the ICC separate from the players. I mean, they are performers. Yeah. There's actually a really great article, P, penned by Simon Taufel for a new platform called Today's Tale. It's not, this is not an advertisement, but he wrote about umpiring India versus Pakistan. And you can just tell with umpires, I mean, they do talk about their own performances in terms of, you know, how they were seeing it that day, you know, how they were coming, how the decisions were coming out, just like spinners. But yeah, how, you know, umpires should be as subject to as much scrutiny as players. Simple. And also it winds people up massively. So, you know.
Pez, I'm going to take this moment to just derail this conversation and just say that, geez, Simon Taufel would be a great, he'd be a great podcast guest, wouldn't he? Like, wouldn't it be great? He'd be my top three, I reckon, to get on.
I've seen him speak before.
Only then. But also, even if not, happy to just get some stories. I mean, there's a few white whales we've got out there, pairs with a great cricketer in terms of guests.
Go on.
Yeah. Well, you know, Shane Watson just seems just ungettable, despite you know, a couple of requests. Who else couldn't we get? Ponting's probably gettable at some point. Shane Warne's not gettable. Kevin Peterson be the same.
He followed us,
and I think someone did a tweet maybe criticising him or something, and then there was an unfollow. So, you know, that's how the internet works, and that's how this game works. But, yeah, Taufel. Wouldn't he be great? Just an umpire with character. Ian Gould might be all right as well.
Well, Taufel played grade cricket, as did Daryl Hare. So,
yes. You know. Yeah, so Daryl Hare would be another good one. Yeah, I mean, these throwdowns write themselves.
Let's have an internal meeting on air.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Geez, Gale's a good player. Pez, something's also been in the media in the UK a lot, not just this week, but across the board during this World Cup, is the lack of accessibility for English people to watch the games because it's not on free-to-air TV. Friend of the show, Ali Martin, wrote an article saying that there is a chance that the final may actually be accessible to free-to-air viewers in the UK. But it is a really funny thing about how cricket in England have stifled themselves, where there's like 500,000 people watching these games of the World Cup, right? And you think, oh, that's actually quite good. And then you realise that 6.1 million people are watching the Women's World Cup on the BBC. It's a funny situation, and maybe one that Australia, you know, needs to be wary of as they, you know, slowly move into the subscription only accessibility for the for cricket in this country. Obviously, Channel 9's had it for so long now, 7 and Fox Sports have it for the next few years, but it is probably slowly moving into going to be put behind a paywall, and it's a bit of a worrying sign when you see what's happening with cricket in England with the, you know, these like low viewing numbers.
Yeah, mate. Look, absolutely. So the background for those who aren't across the vagaries of how England have managed its broadcast TV, and I'm only saying this at extremely high level, but cricket was available on free-to-air TV all the way until 2005. Some of the numbers that they got for that famous Ashes series haven't been bettered. You're talking multiple millions of people watching the cricket, and you can only imagine the kind of engagement that the flow-on engagement that creates. As soon as that was over, that series was over, the new deal was handed all the way to Sky and completely off the BBC, bar the odd highlights package, as far as I understand it. And it has, you know, then diminished the TV numbers to, by a factor of 8 to 10. And it is funny when you go to the UK to note that cricket is essentially a special interest sport now. So it's a cautionary tale for Australian cricket, who has, you know, its cricket behind both a paywall and free to air at the moment. So, you know, it's a question for administrators. You know, and it's one that asks of them, you know, their existential question. To what interest do they serve? You know, there is more money in pay TV. You know, there's more short-term money, but what long-term effect do you have on the game by putting it entirely behind a paywall? There are probably some simplistic terms I'm putting them in, but, you know, it's a pretty simple equation, isn't it? You know, more eyeballs, more engagement. I think it speaks to the heart of what administrators are there for, though. You know, Cricket Australia, as Gideon Hay very often points out, is essentially a not-for-profit business, you know, who's and is a taxpayer-funded business. or organisation. So its interests are the people that it serves, not just the bottom line and the profit. So I feel like I'm probably speaking in a manner as though Cricket Australia are thinking of veering towards pay TV or putting it behind a paywall. I don't understand. I don't think that's the case. But that's where England have kind of gone, and it means that they get fewer eyeballs in their country, which has, you know, triple the population of Australia.
To give an example of how far cricket has fallen in the UK, I was reading an article the other day, and I should be citing who wrote the article, but I cannot for the life of me, Pez, think of who wrote it. But they were saying that cricket's fallen so far that there's some Channel 4 highlights in the UK, which is on free-to-air for those Australian viewers playing at home, and it screens at 1 a.m. After a show which is entitled My Dog is Gay and Other Pets. It's not high on the agenda of people.
Well, it's like when, our Channel 7 show, you know, went on at 4 p.m. Up against Channel 10's Totally Wild. And, we got schooled. That's a good show, Totally Wild, to be fair.
To be fair, very catchy intro tune. That's what undid us, in my opinion. Pez, we're going to speak to Vitush Nahantharajah. Well, we're going to try to anyway on the train. If Vish isn't on right now, it'll be because he went through a tunnel or something, or other metaphors and euphemisms like that. Then after that, hashtag AskTGC. Well, you know what? We tried. We tried to get Vitush Nahantharajah on the phone, and we sort of got him. Well, no, we did get him, and he even apologised for some potential sound issues upcoming, and then he went through a tunnel just as he was giving the most eloquent, funny, erudite answer anyone's ever given on this podcast. It was a great interview, and then it cut out, and we thought, you know what? Over the years, we've hurt our listeners' ears enough with poor quality sound, it's just not worth it. Apologies to Vish and apologies to the listener out there that you don't get your fix of Vish. But tell you what, go on his Twitter because it's the second best Twitter on the internet after the great cricketer. Pez, hashtag RCGC.
After cricket shouts.
And cricket shouts, yes. Is it cricket shouts or cricket shouts? I can't remember which one it is.
I don't know.
My favourite thing is when other cricket accounts just blatantly just steal our stuff. But then it is good that we then get about 50 notifications of people saying that they're stealing. Anyway, Twitter jokes.
Why don't you write back to them, guys? Don't write to us. Write back to them. Start a fight.
Twitter jokes on the internet. That's what people have tuned in to this podcast for. Pez, couple of live shows coming up, mate. I haven't got this on the agenda, but I think we should be talking about it. Sydney and Melbourne, tickets are selling. Sydney's half gone, or is it half empty? Or is it half full? I'm not sure. But half the tickets are gone for the Sydney show, and it's in a month's time. So tickets are going. So I recommend if you want to bring a couple of the boys along, a couple of the girls along, whatever you want to do, come along to the Sydney show. It's at the Comedy Store. The 25th of July, we're going to be in Melbourne. Tickets, you know what? Tickets a little slower. Tickets a little slower in Melbourne. Let's call it a spade, Pez. Tickets are a little slower in Melbourne. Tickets are available.
They won't be slow once we announce who the guest is, though.
I'd just forgotten about that, mate. Yeah. That's actually exciting.
Well, we won't do that just yet, but I would say that, wouldn't I? But we had confirmation of a guest yesterday, and, he'll be parking himself on stage, it should be good. It should be good.
Yep, we've got the park cricketer from Facebook.
That reference will make sense. But yeah, that's right, the park cricketer. What happened to him?
I don't know. He got sick of copy and pasting, I think.
That was just funny.
Anyway. Let's just go through our history of, like, you know, people we've come across over the years of doing this thing.
People love that shit.
Yeah. Pez, then we're going to the UK after that. Yeah. Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester, London. In between some corporate shows as well. So just a reminder that we are available for corporate shows in August in the UK. Check out our dates by going to greatcricketer.club and get us around your club. I'll tell you what, we do like getting around things, and we'll get around anything as long as you're paying us handsomely, because we do have to eat food. And so all tickets available, Pez, for the live shows. Am I selling this well? greatcricketer.club. For all the live shows. I've got some great guests.
And you're all doing entertainment around the Ashes, using the Ashes as a hook, probably the 05 Ashes, which I would do if I was English as
100%.
Well, to be fair. If you want self-loathing Aussies, people prepared to, put that magnifying glass to the cultural wasteland that is Australia. Yeah. No, I'm not a loather. I'm actually a great lover of Australia. Then, you know, don't go to some of our kind of 50 test playing Jarvid man dad dismissing brethren who'll also be doing those tours. Look at three blokes who played 30 years of combined grade cricket experience. Yeah, have a look. Let's have a look at him. Let's have a look at this bloke. Have a look upstairs. Upstairs being gradecricketer.club. It's a contact form. And I'm sure we're half the price of the Jarvid man now dismissing tickets, please. Storytelling friend of ours.
Pez Luke writes in. He says, "G'day, boys. What are the chances of discussing tactics to watch 48 days of back-to-back cricket? Besides the usual work obligations and trying to stay active through sleep deprivation, I've also got to manage the wife situation. It's all fine when Australia are playing. However, we're not covering neutral blockbusters, India versus New Zealand and England versus West Indies. Fear my ability to watch said games without hindrance. Appreciate your thoughts and advice. Thanks, Choppers." That comes from Luke. So how does Luke watch 48 days of back-to-back cricket, Sam? He's got a wife and a job.
Right, so it's important to delve into these things a little bit, mate. Like, you know, you can always do what you want in life unless you're kind of physically restrained by the law or, you know, law and order agents.
Sure.
Like, you can do what you want. You can watch 48 days of back-to-back cricket, but the parentheses in this question is, and retain or maintain other elements of my life, like my relationship and my work, to some level of quality, right? He can watch 48 days of back-to-back cricket, nude, without any food, and he dives. Anyway, let's not go into that. So just, okay. I don't know why that became the first thing I thought about. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Weird. So, yeah, he can do that, but can he do it while maintaining a relationship and work? I'd put it back to you, Luke. Is it possible to maintain a healthy relationship if you are watching neutral cricket matches until sort of 4 or 5 a.m.? It's probably not. Can you perform to any level of, like, quality or service to an organisation, however, you know, evil they are or not, if you watch cricket till 5 a.m. every morning? Probably not. So how do you do it? Well, you sit on the couch and you turn it on and you do it. Can you maintain the other two? No. Do you care about the other two? I mean, your actions would suggest not. And if you don't care about your relationship and your work, then presumably you're willing to let it go. Mm. So ask yourself, do I care about work? Do I care about my relationship? If the answer's yes, well, then you can't. It's impossible to watch 48 days of back-to-back cricket.
Yeah.
If you care. But the question is, do you, Luke? Do you care?
Pez, I don't, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't know who Luke is. Don't know what his marital situation is. Don't know if he's been going through a tough time. Don't know how much he really wants to be involved in the cricket. It seems like he really needs to watch the cricket. Maybe he's gone through a stage where he's just been watching, you know, My Kitchen Rules, you know, Love Island. He's had to put through some dark times through the summer, and now he's going to cash in by 48 days of back-to-back cricket. I mean, don't worry about the blockbusters. I mean, when are you going to watch, you know, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, the highlights? These sort of, you know, for me, I can't, you know, my relationships tend to go for about an hour. That makes it sound like I'm hiring escorts. That's not necessarily the case. You know, I'm a guy, Pez, who lives alone and just drinks wine, watching the World Cup, and then tweets about it aggressively, saying that everyone's shit. So I don't know what to tell Luke, other than, you know, move out, find yourself a little one better, you know, get yourself a glass of red. And really tuck in for the World Cup, you know. I noticed last night, Pez, when I was scrolling through Twitter, watching the game last night. Big game last night, right? England West Indies. You're thinking it's a big game. I haven't been much cricket this week, so I thought a good chance to really, you know, slip into a Friday night. And away we went. But then I scrolled through Twitter, and Shane Warne and Mark Waugh in my timeline had gone back to back tweets. And I was thinking, what are the boys up to? What are the old lads up to? Shane Warne was announcing to his Twitter followers that he was going to play Fortnite with his son and that everyone should follow. And then Mark Waugh was commentating on the West Tigers game. That was during the West Indies batting innings. So it's good to see the boys getting across that. So my advice to Luke is, well, if Shane Warne and Mark Waugh don't watch it, then, you know, it's not for you. And get on Fortnite.
Okay, this is an anonymous question that comes in, and I'll read it from the start. Hi, TGC. Might be best to remain anonymous for this one. I'm a cricketer in the UK. I have played for a number of years as an opening bat and absolutely love getting squared up and snicking off the second slip after a well-crafted 40, brackets 27. It is not in batting that my love of the game lies, but instead the post and sometimes pre-match showers. We have an ageing left armer who is magical. He cleans up everyone, and it has been commonplace for us to see oppositions at three for shit and games to be over before mid-afternoon. I've seen him take three hat-tricks, clean up professionals, and humiliate club stalwarts. It was a shame, therefore, that a year or so ago, when sharing a shower, he took offence to me pissing on him. Since then, he hasn't played so much. This indiscretion coincided with a nasty divorce, however, and my question is this. Does he no longer play because he fears a repeat of Pissgate, or rather because his now ex-wife flaunts herself during important cup games at our club? Thanks, TGC.
Pez, we're getting a lot of questions over the years about blokes pissing on each other in the shower. And now that I think about it, I actually have seen this phenomenon take place, I think. Yes, no, I have. I have seen it a couple of times, actually. God, great cricket was some dark times in my life. I think that's the crux of this crime, because it is an assault. In the showers, albeit, you know, just a mild horseplay. I don't know, cricket affords you many great things, you know, the ability to waste, you know, an entire Saturday, an entire summer, and most of your youth whilst damaging your skin irreparably. It can afford you that. It can also afford you some dark times, though. You know, it's not all good times. And that's sharing a shower with men who then piss on you. It's a very aggressive play. And it's usually committed, the act of pissing on someone, urinating on someone is committed by the guy who perceives to be the biggest alpha of the team. It's a real alpha power play. But at the same time, it's I can't think of a more primal act than to urinate on another person like a dog would to mark their territory. So I'm not sure if this is like if Pissgate in Anonymous's question is an ownership thing. Maybe this guy was a new guy to the team. They wanted to, he had a good game. They wanted to mark his territory. They wanted to own him. They wanted to claim ownership. So they urinated. I don't know, Pez. I can't fathom a time in my own life where I would go, this feels right to me. You know, if we just had a full day Saturday playing with the lads, the only way to top this off is get yourself into a warm shower and, you know, just let go on someone's leg. Thoughts?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the wording. And he describes the offence that this club legend took about him being pissed on as a shame. It was a shame that when I pissed on him, he took offence.
That he reacted like that.
Not I'm sorry or I question whether I should have done it. It's just a shame that he took offence that when I stood in the shower with this guy who, you know, helps us win,
yes,
that I decided to urinate on him. And then to ask us with no facts other than what Anonymous provides,
yep,
whether him not playing anymore as a result of a bad divorce or being pissed upon.
Mm. Yeah. Is it that or his wife? What about his wife, Pez?
Yeah. I would humbly suggest it could be both.
Yes.
Also, she flaunts herself during the game. What a bad turn of luck for this bloke who just gets professionals out, has teams three for shit, takes multiple hat-tricks, and then realises that all the while he's being pissed on and his wife divorces him and turns up to cricket and flaunts herself anyway. Why is she still going to cricket if they divorced?
Well, the wording here is that she flaunts herself. She flaunts herself during important cup games. She doesn't come to the early rounds. Only to the important, but, you know, the big blockbusters. Once it gets to the final stages, the knockout rounds. Just the important cup games where she's flaunting herself.
This is the flip side of those places where club cricket is really thriving when it's a real community event. Like I'm actually saving this story for hopefully a book that I write one day, but I'll just say it now anyway because I have no discipline. But I caught up with an old deputy headmaster of mine the other day. Don't ask why. We're just both in Melbourne and we said g'day and it was nice. And he is a sports chaplain on the side. And he was telling me this story about sport. It's like an agency and clubs call in their sports chaplains to help when they're struggling, you know, whether it's spiritually or morally or otherwise.
Amazing.
Don't ask me why. It's just a thing that exists. And he told me a story of being called into a club that was now on its knees struggling because the club had engaged at the first grade level in some of the players had engaged in wife swapping.
Nice.
And the wife swapping had caused some problems. Now the club is struggling to stay afloat. I'm not going to say any more. Saving it for the book. But the sports chaplain came in to help fix the club where some organised wife swapping had gone awry.
Yeah, I love the
great not dysfunctional at all game.
I love the idea that like some organised wife swapping had occurred, and they thought, "Well, we need to get the chaplain in for this."
Like, oh, that's the yeah.
Who's the one guy who can solve this? Rev, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, the club was struggling to pay its fees. You know, its fees and stuff like that. Because the wife swapping had deterred people from playing cricket again. Oh, fuck. What about a bit of wife swapping, boys?
I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, share kit, you know, they swap gloves. Can't use your bat? Yeah, no problems. Box, getting a little bit personal. How about your wife? Andy Watto writes in. He says, lads, I've recently been fielding questions from a number of acquaintances who must be deep diving the TGC archives. In quotations, was that you on the grey cricketer back in 2018? Should I, A, bask in the momentary sunshine and bank on the social capital of a fleeting mention on a niche podcast, or B, take umbrage to the fact that my so-called friends believe there are other individuals also operating under the moniker Andy Watto, better suited to having their drivel read out on said podcast? C, both.
Well, okay. You know, why do people cloak some of these questions that are ultimately compliments with, like, with insults?
I don't know.
Firstly, niche podcast is a tautology. Mm. All podcasts are niche. You know, what podcast is generic? Secondly, it ain't niche, mate. There's... I don't have that much anger in me this morning, to be honest. I'm just trying to do another bit. It is niche. Mm. Podcast is niche. What should you do about I don't know, Andy. What's the other option to claim that it wasn't him? Other individuals operating.
Is this the same?
Andy Water.
Is this the same?
Like
him Andy?
Going, should I lie and say it wasn't me?
Yeah, this the Andy who wrote. He wrote a question about wife swapping a while ago, but which he didn't read out. We did have another question of his, but he was talking about wife swapping. How his wife left him for a friend. See, now I'm doing a thing where I'm sledging it back because that never happened.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, Andy. I appreciate you now having two questions read out on this podcast. Is it the Andy Wadda that you know, friend out there?
Mm.
Yes, it is. It probably is. Yes.
Maybe it's Shane Watson under a moniker.
Fucking Shane Watson, honestly. Just ungettable. White whale.
Come on, Wadda.
Is he scared that we're going to do review jokes because he thinks that we embody the fucking thing. Morons out there going, we're going to review it? Fucking kill me. Sorry.
William Kennedy, right? Good afternoon, fellas. I don't have Twitter nor understand how hashtags actually work. Hashtag RST.
Not bad, Will. Like it.
Not bad, Billy. I need some major moral consultation here as to whether or not my father is a good man.
That's really well worded.
Yeah.
I like it.
He was an honest Catholic who occasionally attends Easter and or Christmas Mass, yes. But that's besides the point. Yeah, he's loyal to the tribe. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
He was president of my junior cricket association for a few seasons. A team one age group below mine was short two players, and my own team was having... come off an unbeaten premiership season, was overstacked in the right arm medium/middle order batsman department. In order to not have a team forfeit their season and place their subs elsewhere, he suggested that I drop an age group and my brother move up two age groups to help fill the site. I can happily say that I won the association batting trophy and a close third in the bowling. Not bragging, but I did only get out once in the season. I peaked too early and have not adjusted to playing men superior and older than myself at cricket, and I wish I could blame my father for this. Is he to blame for my lack of progression as a cricketer? Is he morally justified having moved me down an age division so that nine others could play cricket? Or should I retrospectively be stripped of my batting trophy?
A really fantastic question. And I'm glad we had time for this one today, Pez. I don't think his father's a bad man. I think this just shows that his dad, you know, really needed this. He needed something, and this was the thing that he needed. He needed to go back-to-back in a premiership season. He needed to alpha you by making sure nine other kids had a great Saturday by getting a game in, even though you would never recover playing men in cricket, which I'm glad you specified. He is to blame for your lack of progression in cricket. That's not your own fault or your own skill level. That's your dad's fault. Is he morally justified having moved me down an age division so that nine others could play cricket? No, not really. Morally, no. You know, he's obviously a man of the Lord, and he, you know, we'll have to answer to him one day. Yes, you should be stripped of your batting trophy. Yes. Yes, you should be. you were older than the other kids.
I don't know, William. If you're wondering why you can't play against men, I would suggest that it's not because of a little tinkering with age groups. And maybe ask yourself, why did Dad make me play with younger kids?
Yeah.
Maybe it was just your skill level, William. Maybe it was just your skill level. Now, here goes. There's a surprise here.
Okay.
You believe that the RTGCs are over?
I do.
Not. I have been given a private Ask TGC message that concerns you.
Oh, okay.
And I've read it, and I believe it's worthy of reading out.
Okay, well, I'm doing the edit, so this will go one of two ways.
Good point. well made, and I shouldn't have raised this until I was doing the edit. Nevertheless, we've come this far.
Okay.
And, we'll just... I mean, I guess if I don't hear it in the show, I'll just ask again.
But yep.
He goes, a question for you. It's from somebody whose moniker is BG's 84.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the question goes, and this will wrap up the show. Every time I hear Ian bemoan the standard of Pakistan fielding/catching with comparisons to third grade, I'm reminded of his one sub-fielding first grade appearance. Sub-fielding in brackets.
Mm.
Having previously captained him, I had an ad and misplaced sense of pride when he sauntered on to replace an injured bowler. Aside, yes, I played first grade, but this is not about me. Boundary riding at point, brackets, his preferred angle on the game, and one, it must be said, he was highly accomplished from. He means at. He bounced in to collect a firm cut shot, only to be outdone by the infamous second bounce spin. The ball evaded him, and I mean completely. He didn't even manage a touch, and awaited his collection from the Chatswood Oval gutter. I couldn't help but smile amid the vocal derision from those on and off the field. It was nice not to be the biggest imposter on the field for a change. Full stop. There's no question.
No question. Just a statement. great chance for me to get some names in here to this story. Beau Casson was the bowler. One test cap.
Oh, good.
Greg Mayle was the batsman. Greatest grade cricketer of all time. Smashed all records.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Nicholson, I think, was playing that game. Yeah, he was. He was playing that game. Craig Simmons of Big Bash fame. They were all playing. And then there was me who had two beers on the sideline watching first grade play on a Sunday, because that's what you do. Then there was an injury. So I came onto the field and was filling a backward point. Beau Casson was bowling to Greg Mayle, half tracker. I was livid with him. I said, Beau, pitch it up, mate. Any danger of pitching one up?
As he bowled it, yeah.
as he bowled it. Mm. Greg Mayle, late cut. Just didn't even get a hand on it. Did not even touch it. BG's 84 is right. Didn't get a hand on it. Went for four. And I had to pick a ball up from where I'd previously been drinking my two beers in front of my friends, rightly said, to the derision because whilst they were supporting my team, they weren't supporting me that day. So that's a real thing that happened. But yeah, I don't know what else to tell you. Just got some names into
a story.
Well,
I guess, does that give you any pause or cause to reconsider your comments about Pakistan fielding and fielding of those sides that essentially aren't in cricket's monstrous top three?
No, I feel confident that I'm a better fielder than 90% of international cricketers, and Pakistan were a fucking disgrace that day, and they should apologise to the ICC.
Well, that's all the time we've got for the grey cricketer this week. What you've just heard there is the classic attitude of any Sydney third grader, better player than most internationals. We'll catch you next week.
Sorry.
Hope you don't mind. great. Good show.